Welcome back. Well, the 10th annual BRICS Summit kicks off tomorrow, with the focus being on how emerging markets can further advance their economies, build diplomatic relations, and improve socio-economic development in Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. The threat of a worsening global trade war is set to dominate talks at the summit. Last year, Simon Fremantle, political economist at Standard Bank, was of the view that the election of Donald Trump as U.S. president could provide the BRICS bloc with a new lease on life, and he joins us now to discuss this in relation to the summit and the threat of a worsening global trade war. Thanks so much, Simon, for your time this evening. I want to start off just looking overall at the summit. It's themed BRICS in Africa, collaboration for inclusive growth and shared prosperity in the fourth industrial revolution. On the eve of the official kick-off here, what do you see these talks actually achieving?
I think, Alicia, there's a couple of big themes, and certainly there are some sub-themes, and the idea that the discussions will angle towards collaboration around the fourth industrial revolution is certainly constructive. But I think that the two major themes that people will glean from the summit, the first will be, how are the BRICS positioning themselves collectively, and are there any collective points of commonality when it comes to the position that Donald Trump has put large global economies in with regards to the principles around free trade, around multilateralism, around support for the constant mitigation and attacking of issues like climate change. Mm-hmm. Now, even if they may not approach this issue directly, some of the foreign ministers in the BRICS economies have said this is not an agenda point in the conference itself. It would be very surprising to me if they didn't come out with a collective message in support of the principles that the U.S. has started to relinquish its support for, or at least started to step back from playing a global leadership role in. And as you alluded to earlier, I'm of the view that the positions that Donald Trump has taken on these issues gives the BRICS new relevance. I mean, 3 or 4 years ago, or even a year or two ago, the United States was playing a global leading role in championing these issues. There was little space for entrants from the emerging world to champion and drive the debate in these areas. And now there certainly is. And I think that can be a very constructive role that the BRICS can play.
Absolutely. Simon, I mean, before this point, we had emphasis on BRICS counter-interests, as you've alluded to, more so, than the common interests. Have you started to see significant enough shift in that positioning?
Counter-interests as in within the BRICS grouping itself?
Yes.
Yes. So, look, I think that another interesting dynamic that is emerging as a result of the position that the U.S. has taken on some key issues is it's disguised to an extent the very real and quite glaring inconsistencies within the BRICS grouping itself. I mean, you have inconsistencies in economic scale. South Africa contributes as a share of BRICS GDP is about 1.5%, China 65%. In terms of the political systems in these economies, some are open and transparent and competitive democracies, such as Brazil, South Africa, India, and others certainly are far less attuned to those systems, far more centralized and autocratic, some would say. So I think that the inconsistencies and the inability of the BRICS in the past to reach common positions has been slightly resolved by the fact there is now commonality around resistance to the positions taken by Donald Trump. So it's I think that is part of the opportunity, that now the BRICS can set aside some of their obvious differences and find positions on which they can all agree. What? It doesn't mean that there are no longer differences within the grouping itself. There are very clear political tensions between some of the BRICS partners, and they won't be able to come up with a consistent view as to an antagonistic stance against the United States, because many of the BRICS economies, India perhaps foremost, needs to retain very benevolent relations with the U.S. to control some of its own regional security issues.
Yeah.
But I do think that at least they will be able to come up with a strong message there. And within the context of a rising global trade war, I think there'll be a lot of attention placed on what their statement will be.
Well, South Africa, within that context, already reaping a lot of the benefit. We've heard that China is looking to invest just under $15 billion in the country. And of course, we need to break that down in terms of, the kind of investments we're seeing on the one hand versus loans that we're seeing on the other hand. Just honing in on the loans specifically, we know that the IMF has cautioned previously, Simon, against China pushing African debt over the edge. It's a concern. Is it a concern for you, looking at debt-to-equity ratios? And is South Africa prepared to take on debt like this?
Look, I think there's a couple of dynamics to that question. The one is, in some countries, the DRC has been foremost in that regard. There were concerns about how debt reduction plans for vulnerable African economies were starting to be undermined by a surge in lending from Chinese state institutions. And the DRC really caught the headlines there because it was vulnerable and it was starting to see debt reduction largely through participation from advanced economies. But by and large, China's lending model to other African economies, Ethiopia, Angola, to an extent Kenya and others, has been largely positive. It's been geared towards infrastructure spend, and it hasn't had a meaningful enough impact on indebtedness to be of significant alarm. So that if you isolate that point, and you take away the manner in which African economies have started to borrow more on the international markets, raise more Eurobonds and so on, collectively, yes, we've started to see debt levels rise across Africa, but it wouldn't be fair to necessarily target China as being responsible for that elevated indebtedness.
Yeah, and when it comes to terms of credit as well, I came across some commentary that from a credit perspective, it is a pretty lenient creditor. I just want to take a look at bilateral trade very quickly, Simon, because it's not reached its full potential. We know that China has been an enabler from an export perspective. To what extent are the tables starting to turn on that, where we're looking at it being more supportive of growth on a sustainable basis?
Well, look, that absolutely has to happen. One of the big challenges that the BRICS face is that China is so large within the grouping, and all economies within the BRICS, except for Brazil, run very sizable trade deficits with China. South Africa of about $7 billion, India of over $50 billion. These trade imbalances have to be addressed. I was pleased to see President Xi Jinping mentioning that in the meetings with President Ramaphosa, saying that some of their investment is going to be geared towards developing South African production capacity so that we can export more to China. But the proof will be in the pudding. This is something
Absolutely.
That we have to see playing out in order to create a much more sustainable relationship with China. And that dynamic is across Africa. There is not a single country that runs a meaningful trade surplus with China. So it's something that has to be addressed.
Well, let's leave it there. Simon, thanks so much for having joined us on the line this evening. That, of course, Simon Fremantle, who's a political economist at Standard Bank.